Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. Tonight, we've got a brand new band that I personally just discovered, and we're going to have them on the show. Joining us in just a bit is Johnny Iguana. Gotta love that name. He's with the Chicago group, the Claudettes. He's the keyboardist, band leader, and they've got a brand new album called Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium. It comes out, just came out on Yellow Dog Records, as produced by Mark Neal. And Claudettes, how do you describe them? I don't know. We'll have to find out and see what your thoughts are. They're a little bit of blues, full throttle energy. They've got a jazz kind of thing going on, a little bit of 60s pop soul. You name it, they do it. They throw it in a blender, and it comes out as the Claudettes. And we'll hear it, and we'll talk to Johnny Iguana coming up after your headlines. Good evening and welcome to Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. And tonight, as I said, we've got a very special guest. It's a group that I just got turned on to by a publicist friend of mine this afternoon. I listened to some of their tunes. I was knocked out by the fact I couldn't really describe what I was hearing, only that I liked it. And we're going to be joined in just a moment by the band's leader and pianist, piano man, Johnny Iguana. Coming up in just a few minutes, he'll be joining us as we listen to music from his band, the Claudettes, and their brand new album, Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium, on Yellow Dog Records. It was released just a few weeks ago. This band is from the Windy City, and we're going to enjoy a lot of them coming up this hour. So if you like music that's a little bit out of the box, stay with us. We're going to be joined by Johnny in just a second, but right now, let's give it all up for good. This is music from the Claudettes.
These days, said nobody knows how to talk to each other these days.
Amazing new stuff. That's the Claudettes. And we've got the guy with probably the coolest name in rock and roll, Johnny Iguana, joining us on the show right now. Thank you, Johnny, for joining us. Are you there?
The fakest name in rock and roll.
I love it. Just rolls off the tongue so well. And I got to tell you, I was not aware of the Claudettes until this afternoon. I got a call from Wendy over at the office there, and she said, hey, have you heard these guys? I said, haven't. She said, let me send you a link. Within an hour, I was like, please let them come on the show. So,
sweet. Yeah. You know, it takes a very hip band to remain really obscure, like we do. It's really difficult to do these days.
Now,
what with the internet and all.
Right, right. what's interesting is that you guys are literally indescribable. I like the fact that so many bands come out, and I don't want to say cookie cutter, but they all have similar styles. You guys are a blend of so many different influences. Your piano playing, for instance, at times reminds me of Dr. John or Alan Toussaint or perhaps even Thelonious Monk, like on Influential Farmers, a track on the album.
Oh, yeah. Good. I like talking to a guy that has these reference points. That's excellent.
I'm an old school Frank Zappa fan, and nobody really gets Zappa. And I try to get him as much as I can. And a lot of your music reminds me of the approach maybe that he had in his mind. Let's talk about the Claudettes. First of all, interesting name. I understand you took it from the bar you were playing?
Yeah. There was a woman who was kind of associated with the band in our early days, that thankfully is not the case anymore, who's named Claudette, and we were sort of a house band. This was back when we were just a piano drums instrumental duo, so that was some real fireworks there, just filling up 120 minutes, you know, with just instrumental piano and drums, so that was a real workout. It was really almost designed as just a challenge, a combination of a challenge and a good time for myself, you know, because I come from the East Coast originally, and I've got a Jewish mother who will come up after me after a show and say, I couldn't hear the keyboard. And so I decided I was going to start a band where you're going to hear the keyboard.
Right.
Because, you know, it's going to be, all it is banging, you know, just me having as much fun as I can on the piano.
Who was it that inspired your playing style? Because like I said, it's some of the deeper musicians that are out there that a lot of my listeners may or may not know. But you're not your typical run-of-the-mill piano players. I don't hear any Billy Joel, Elton John, you know, things like that in there. Like I said, you've got a lot of monkisms in some of your playing.
That's probably, I'm not a particular fan of the two touchstones you just mentioned there, even though they fall under my category of very, very talented, you know, deserving of their stardom, but just the taste of the music doesn't really appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I grew up, the two things that I was really into at like age 15, my uncle got me into Chicago blues, which is why I'm out here. I've been out here a long time now, but I was from Philadelphia. And my uncle gave me, when I was about 15, Junior Wells Hoodoo Man Blues, and he gave me Jimmy Smith Organ Grinder Swing. And I was just off and running with those. I was just, you know, we had a cassette deck, and I was just, instead of on a 75-degree sunny day playing baseball and or whatever out in the yard, I was sitting at the piano running back and forth to hit rewind to just, like, pick out particular licks and bass lines and stuff. And it was interesting growing up in Philly because that's the home of the Hammond organ heroes, you know, Jimmy Smith and Jimmy McGriff and Shirley Scott and these. And so I learned, you know, all these walking bass lines and stuff from these organ players, you know, one push play at a time on the cassette deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when I got into the Chicago blues thing, my friends and I started I joined a friend's blues band and we started playing in like black neighborhoods of Philadelphia, like all these bunch of white kids putting on suits and ties, and our friends from high school coming out to see us and playing like, you know, 2 or 3 hours of blues that we were playing too loud and too fast, but we were so excited about the music that I think it was kind of infectious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kids from the high school back then, you know, had fake IDs and would come out on Monday nights and see us play. It was just it was a great, jolly good illegal time. But just kind of honed the chops that way of just, you know, getting better on the job, just playing hour and hour and hour after, hour after hour of these Chicago classics. And, you know, this is just, this is, you know, one of the world's great music cities. And
definitely.
And then I was lucky enough to meet Junior Wells in New York City when I was living there, and right at a time where he was looking for a piano player. So right after college, I moved out here. I've been playing ever since. I've gotten to do a lot of great traveling with Chicago blues artists, but But that was half of it. The other half was when I was 15, I really got into Minutemen and Husker Du and The Clash and Wire. And so I was into all this punk stuff. And the keyboard style I sort of developed was not only piano, but also playing organ through a Leslie and not spinning the Leslie, but playing it more like the Deep Purple, like overdrive sound.
Okay, the John Lord sound.
Yeah. But for me, that came more from like Bob Mould, you know, that kind of like big distorted sound. And he plays these add nine chords where you don't have a third in there. They're just kind of hollow fifths with another fifth on top of it. And I kind of picked that up. And that's what I had a band called Oh My God for years. And that was what drove that band, was the sort of like transferring the Husker Du, Bob Mould kind of guitar thing to the organ. So really a lot of the musicians I love are not keyboard players, but I kind of figured out how to have, you know, keyboard is not generally what you think of as the most like fun, rocking, good time, like guitar. You
right,
know?
Right.
So I feel like I want in, you know, I want in on that fun and that excitement and that volume. So I've been sort of half influenced by the great, you know, Otis Spann and the great Chicago blues piano players, but also the punk guitar players.
Right, right. You mentioned the old blues guitar or the old blues piano players. You also remind me a little bit at times of Pinetop Perkins, who used to live out here in Indiana with us.
Oh, sure, yeah.
What an
yeah.
amazing plunker he was, as he used to call himself. your roots in Philly, though. I mean, I didn't realize it was such a blues scene in Philadelphia. Of course, we all know the Gamble and Huff machine that was there with the Philly soul sound.
Well, there wasn't really a blues scene. We kind of just... That's what we were into. And, you know, I think like a lot of people back then, we discovered a lot of our blues by way of the Allman Brothers and the Doors.
Right.
You know,
okay.
That, you know, Backdoor Man and the way they did Stormy Monday, you know, Allman Brothers doing Stormy Monday and You Don't Love Me and that stuff, which then later I discovered the original blues versions, you know, but that's a fine entry into that music. And it's a little bit more, you know, sort of mass, you know, popular, you know, music, those artists, and then you can kind of work your way backwards. But in Philly, there was always more of a jazz scene in Philly than blues. But that's just what we were playing, and we just found places that would let us play. I think it was mostly, like I said, our exuberance and the fact that we could bring people in to see us. You know,
you mentioned playing with Junior Wells. I remember booking him at a blues club I worked at back in the '90s. When were you with him?
I was with him '94 to '96.
Wow, you might have played a show that I'd booked. I don't know. That's about the time I was booking. Do you ever remember playing a place called Bugsy's in Indiana?
What town?
Highland.
Hmm.
It was called Bugsy's, and it was also called Players. It changed names during our reign.
Maybe Players. Is that anywhere near Indianapolis or not really?
It's on Indianapolis Boulevard, but it's in okay. Northwest Indiana.
It's possible. You know, it was quite a whirlwind. I mean, we were doing 35 shows. This was, you know, as you know, that was the sort of blues boom, the
right.
blues revival. And we were out, we were doing 35 shows and then coming home and going out for 30 shows. You know, it was like that, like almost on repeat.
Wow.
So it's possible I did do it. I remember, for some reason, it always stuck out with me playing somewhere right up Route 41, playing someplace called, like, Someone's House of Blues. There already was House of Blues, but it was like Bob's House of Blues. And I remember the place didn't have any heat.
Oh,
and
man.
We were playing there in the winter. It was really sketchy.
Wow.
But that was not your place. No,
nope,
no,
definitely wasn't.
Yeah. I do remember playing in Indianapolis, and it took us 8 hours to get there in a blizzard, and we showed up like very late for the gig and had to go right on stage after like standing on the side of the highway for hours at a time.
Wow. Are you working a single? I mean, singles are almost archaic at this point, given radio and, as you mentioned, the internet, but are you working anything specifically from Scandal at the Gymnasium?
Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium, to put it fully there. And there are like three tracks in particular that are kind of almost like suggesting. But I've noticed from looking at a lot of the radio play that a lot of people, I'm glad, are digging into the record. And you know, different shows have different energies. And some of the stuff, as you noted, is really intimate and quiet and kind of rootsy, and other stuff is kind of like carnival music.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on and right now I've been reaching out to a lot of music blogs and I'm suggesting different things to different ones because of just the sort of what they showcase typically. But so the one you just played, Give It All Up for Good, I love that track. Mark Neal really put a lot of time into that production. He's got this old like 50s reverb that he actually tunes for the songs. I mean, he's really deep, like where he'll tune the floor tom, he'll tune the reverb. And he put that on hand claps and on like an exhale that we did. And it just sounds like the Zombies to me. He's got this like great 60s sound. I mean, he's got serious precepts of how you do things, and he's got all this vintage stuff, and all the music he puts on to kind of get the bands in the mood is basically 60s music. And that's kind of just like the recording era that he prizes the most. And he's got a lot of that old equipment. And I just, you know, it was kind of cosmic that he reached out to me, because this music goes really well with that vintage sound. And he was not about to produce a compressed, brittle, loud, like indie rock record. He wanted to make it like kind of a timeless record that won't just exist in it. You know, I'm sure you already have records that you've got in the early 2000s that you put on now and go, oh my God, is that loud and compressed and brittle and bright? You know, that was right. It was the volume wars with CDs, with mastering. And he wanted to do the mastering too, because he didn't want it to get wrecked at that stage and take out all the low end just to make it louder, that kind of thing. And I'm really glad. I was actually listening to it when you guys were playing it just now, and through my phone, it sounded really good. And then he carefully does that. He wants there to be enough low end and warmth and roundness that it'll sound good out of anything.
Mark Neal, for those that don't know, is a very famous producer. He's worked famously with the Black Keys in particular, but also several other groups over the last several years. And I've got to wonder, did you guys record on analog tape to get that sound?
No, you know, he has all these tape machines down there, but he uses an interface he likes called Radar, which is very much like working on analog, but still all the sound was going through a really old Studer desk, and everything that it was going through was analog. It just didn't end up on tape, which I think basically just means that there's no hiss. You know, he was able to still, I mean, he had us play at a really low level, like no louder than I'm playing, talking right now. He had us playing drums and playing piano, and so it sounds like we're really rocking. And it's a difficult challenge to play with intensity, but not like really loudly.
Right.
And but the purpose for that was so he could use vintage microphones and preamps, and then crank the preamps so that like the input level is not too loud, and that kind of allows you to get like a bigger, warmer, rounder sound. And a lot of bands can only really rock and do what they're doing if they like just turn up to 11. You know, and
right.
It's really hard to record that way and make something that's easy on the ears.
Well, let's listen to some of that work. This is The Claudettes, and this is the opening track off Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium. Don't Stay With Me. We'll talk some more with Johnny after this.
You just had to tell me all about it. Make a long story short, I doubt it.
The Claudettes, Don't Stay With Me, new music off their latest album, Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium. That's available on Yellow Dog Records, produced by Mark Neal. We were just talking about Mark Neal, a great producer with so many different vintage sounds there. Johnny Iguana, the co-founder of the band and the piano man of the group, is my guest here on Midwest Beat. Johnny, you mentioned that you moved to Chicago. Is the band based here? Is that where everybody came from, the other members?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, this is such a, you know, kind of a destination city for different reasons for people that none of our four members are from this city, but we all live here. And I actually met the guy. Sometimes I call him a guitar player. Sometimes I call him a bass player because he plays a unique instrument called a bass six, which is kind of close to a baritone guitar. So it's like a guitar, but it's tuned an octave lower and has thicker strings. And it was a really good call of Zach to consider that for this band, because when I play piano, I play through an 18, which is like a sub speaker, and then 210s. So I've got a lot of low end. I'm used to being the bass player in a band with my left hand and the keyboard. So I've kind of got that area covered, but we wanted string sounds. So he plays sometimes slide guitar and sometimes bass lines, allowing me to kind of give up the bass end. And we kind of, song by song, it varies kind of who's the sort of bass player in the band. And, but anyway, to get back to your question, Zach and the drummer Danny, both I met when my band Oh My God was traveling through South Dakota years ago. He was booking shows for out there and playing shows, and we got to be good friends. And they were, like, as a bass player and a drummer, as they were in that band, they were just so fantastic. And they both ended up moving to Chicago. And so now I've played in a couple of bands with Zach since then, and I had to ask him to join this band because he's just a great musician and a great energy of a person and a really good singer. It's a really good combination of things. To me, sometimes I feel like after having been in a lot of bands, the most important thing is a good energy in the van. When you're driving all those hours, you want someone that you want to be around. You know, imagine how awful it would be with someone who's like a friend of circumstance or a wife of circumstance or something, but someone you would never choose, but they're just good at what they do. So, you know, you have to try to just like get around their personality or something. And everyone in this band is just quite a great joy to be around. So, but Zach and Danny are from South Dakota. And then Barrett, the singer, is from Minneapolis, and she's been living here a number of years too. And I was really lucky to find her. The drummer that was playing with us at first, when we started doing these set of songs you're hearing here, the drummer who played on that album you were just playing there, Matt Torrey. Matt introduced me to Barrett. He'd played in a country band with her. She was singing country, and she had gone to the New York, the famous school there called the New School, it's a great music school in New York City, and she had been singing, you know, took jazz instruction there, so she's like a jazz-trained country singer. So I mean, I hear like Patsy Cline, and sometimes I hear sort of like that blue-eyed soul sort of Carole King thing from her. She's just got such a welcoming tone, and she's got great pitch. It's just like an amazing, I'm really feeling blessed that she's like available to not just record and play in Chicago, but like go on the road with us too. Everybody's got what I call a hustle in this band, where everyone's got some other source of income that's flexible. So if we need to go out of town for 2 days or 30 days, people can do it.
Wow, that's a great chemistry there to have that that is a working band. Yeah. Barrett, her sound is so lush, for lack of a better word. It just cascades in so many ways and weaves in and around some of the harshness of the piano and the drums, which balances so nicely and
I'm really glad you said that because, you know, there's a certain phenomenon in roots music, which is, you know, just what I call anything with a folk element or a blues element or a jazz or soul, any combination of those American root sounds. And there's kind of a epidemic of what I would call like the red hot mama, you know, like a woman, like, you know, singing like almost in a showy way that's going to get loud. And, you know, there are the Coco Taylors of the world, all these great singers, but not everybody is a Coco Taylor. And there is a certain sort of brash singing that happens in a lot of roots music. And when I first kind of transformed this group from instrumental to vocal, some of my friends and fellow musicians that heard us with Barrett thought like she was almost too like sort of soft and cool. Like they knew that what I do is kind of fiery. So they're like, you need a fiery singer. And I said, like I like the combination of the hot and cold. You remember the McDLT? You keep the hot side hot and the cold side cold. You know, I wanted to, have that. I wanted to have the cool school singer to almost to sort of temper it and, work to play against type almost, and I think it works great. And as long as we've gotten a lot better at arranging as we've been working in this quartet, where we duck out of the way when she sings, and then we kind of explode in the parts where she's not, and it's finely tuned where like it doesn't sound too jerky, like herky jerky that way. But that's really important to do, because especially when we're playing live, what's the point of having a singer if you can't hear anything? You
know, right.
A lot of times you go, and obviously some clubs have more firepower than others as far as their PA and stuff goes, and or a person running the sound that cares. But very often the vocals are totally drowned out, and you know, I'm writing all these words, I'd like them to be heard. So you got to get pretty good at arranging if you want to rock and play with, you know, intensity, but you want the vocals heard, you got to practice a lot and work that out.
With the live shows, are you playing the full album in its entirety at this point since it's new, or are you going back and playing stuff off the EP with different, that had featured different members? What are you working on? I understand you have a new album already written.
We've got a really big repertoire, and that helps because we get asked to play everything from a punk bill to a jazz club and a blues festival. So all different kinds of things. So we've got a repertoire that includes, you know how Booker T would take like any manner of song and turn it into a Booker T instrumental. They'd take, you know, like
right.
a Paul Simon song, you know, Mrs. Robinson or something, but then they'd take like, you know, a standard or something, and they would just kind of funk it up in their groovy style with organ.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like to do that with piano, where we do everything from, Chuck Berry, and I have like a Stevie Wonder thing I do, and then we also do like Grandmaster Flash and Neil Young,
wow.
Hugh Masekela, Santo and Johnny. There's just a lot of different songs that I've like that I just like that I wanted to do in this arrangement, and they're instrumental versions. So if we're playing a jazz club, I can pull out. And also, I do a lot of kind of pretty straight up, like sort of barrel housey blues kind of stuff, and Jay McShann and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're playing at a jazz club, I'll have those, and I'll make sure that the drummer kind of is knows we've run through those. But then if we're on more of a punk bill or something, then we mostly will do more of the vocal songs of our own, and maybe throw in. I've written a lot of instrument. Our first two albums were almost all just like 2 minute bursts of instrumentals, and so there's, you know, tons of instrumentals we've got that we wrote, as well as those adaptations I was saying. So we do any combination of all that, and it's really fun saying, okay, we're playing this club. This is the kind of environment it's going to be, and we're playing for 60 minutes, or we're playing two long sets, or whatever it is. And just kind of imagine, we were just talking about this today, like try to imagine being in that environment and what's going to fly in that place. Is it a place where people are drinking and talking a lot, or is it a place where people are sitting and carefully listening? Very,
mm-hmm.
very different.
Right,
and
right.
Too often, it is a place where people are just like kind of gathered and they're drinking. And, you know, obviously you just want to keep getting better so you can end up playing places where everybody there came to see you, rather than a place that's like a music venue and people go and have a good time and some are listening and some aren't, you know. So.
What are the kind of places you're playing now as far as with this album? I mean, you mentioned all the different styles of music that you can incorporate into. Are you doing more of the lounge stuff? Are you doing more of the concert hall?
It's so all over the map. It's almost like dizzying. I mean, we're playing blues festivals in Europe, and we're playing little bars in many cities from South Dakota to New York or to Boston and back. So it's really all over the place, probably more than I would like it. It's just once you get a good gig here or there, you kind of call it like an anchor gig, you've got to get there, and then you got to look on a map and see what are some. And there's some really good websites these days that you can just put in. You can look at a map and say, okay, here's two towns we can consider. What are all the venues there? And bands write in and tell you about their experiences at them. And so it's, you know, that's how we kind of put together the tours to. Like last year, we got asked to play a great festival in Calgary and a good festival in Montana. So once that was done, I had my route, and then we decided, hell, as long as we're out there, well, let's just go down the West Coast. So
right.
we went down from Calgary to, you know, had a day off driving, beautiful driving, although we were all on pins and needles because that was my last van, and it was its last legs. And we drove to way more Rockies than we knew we were going to drive through.
Wow.
At least it wasn't winter, but...
Right.
But you know, so then we went down through Seattle, Portland to Seattle, and all down through California, and came back through like Vegas, and that was great, but you just got to piece it together. So I'm hoping that, you know, that with this album, that I would really like to be playing Europe more. I've played Europe so many times with blues, with all these different blues grades, but I would like to see the Claudettes over there a lot, because they love American roots music over there, especially something that's alive and justifies its existence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much, I'm sure you've seen, you know, every kind of music has good and bad, but in blues in particular, there's just such kind of a glut of it, because it's a kind of a tourist trade here, where some of it's really good and the albums are really good, and some of it is just sort of seems to be imitating artists of the past, you know.
Right.
And I don't really know the point of that. I feel like our music maybe seems kind of indescribable, as you had said, because it's just me kind of writing and expressing myself. And if anybody really truly did that, we're all weird, you know, if you really get down to it.
Right.
Some people are like kind of afraid to like kind of let that fly, and they want to. And some people also depend on a living from music, and they need to play.
They
got to
fit
something
the niche.
That's understandable.
Yeah. You got to fit that square peg in the round hole somehow.
Yeah.
So let's do. You were talking about instrumentals. Let's do the title track. Is there a story behind this?
You know, I love titling instrumentals. That became the title of the album. I mean, our first two albums were like largely, like I said, instrumentals, and they all have titles. And usually, the title follows long after I've written the music, as I start, it starts to sort of gel in my head. What is this song about, or what is this instrumental song about? You know,
right?
And in that case, it had, first of all, it's got kind of a panic to it. It's fluid, and it's kind of like, I think it's like Raymond Scott, kind of like cartoon music, but it's got definitely a throwback vintage feel. And I just kind of thought about the words that it conjures up for me, and I just started thinking about like, what if it's like some sort of like a panic at like a school, like a sanctioned school dance or something like that, you know? So and that was the kind of like a headline, the dance scandal at the gymnasium, you know? So we went with kind of a headline approach to the artwork and the title of that song. And then Zach, I just kind of wanted, we ended up having Zach sort of yodel in this song. He does a great yodel, you know, he's a multi-talented guy. And in this case, we tapped his little-known yodeling skills.
All right, we're going to listen to it now. This is the title track, the new Claudette's album, Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium. Listen up for that yodel.
Thank you.
Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium. That's brand new music. Also, the title track to the Claudettes' new album on Yellow Dog Records. And joining us on the phone tonight is our guest, Johnny Iguana, who is the band leader and founder and primary songwriter, I believe. Correct, Johnny?
Yeah, that's true. When you referenced before about having written a new album, yeah, we've got 17 songs in queue for the next album that we'll have to get whittled down at some point, but that's a great problem to have. And so when we play live, we'll be doing about 5 songs that aren't on any record, and then a lot of the Dance Scandal songs and some of the older instrumentals. It really is, like I said, I really designed the group to entertain myself to the max, and mm-hmm. That's really what it is. It's just like, and I do break piano keys on every tour, so I have to have the piano key come limping home and get it repaired. I used to monkey around with doing the repairs myself. I decided I was going to be all grown up because, you know, the cost of a key is like $2.19, but the cost of getting it repaired is $90. And I was like, you know, I'm going to just learn this myself. And I had a short bout of fixing keys myself before I totally wrecked an organ that I had. And the guy at the repair shop just laughed at me for what I had done, where, you know, one piece of metal is supposed to lay over another, and I did it backwards, and I was like, they won't screw back together, until I finally cracked the board trying to get them together. Because they make it, they really want to scare you into taking it to the authorized service center. It's a big part of the business. And so that was when my band was opening for Mike Watt, who was one of my heroes from Minutemen and Fire Hose. And I was so excited, and during the day I was just whistling and repairing a key, and I broke it and had to get an emergency repair. So by saving $88, I cost myself like $350. That was the end of it. So now whenever we just come home from a tour, I just have to bring the piano in.
Now with the next record, are you going back to Georgia? Are you going to be working with Mark Neal again?
Oh, you know, that's a long ways away. I mean, we're not going to actually record that yet. Certainly not going to put it out anytime soon. It's just kind of the lifeblood of the group is to always have new songs. And you know, you go out and play a lot of shows. I don't know how bands go out and just play the same songs over and over again. I think some do, and that's great, and you probably find new ways to arrange them and make medleys out of them, whatever you have to do to survive. But I love writing. I'm inspired by my bandmates to write all the time, because as I get to know Barrett better and, like, hear her do some cover songs and some other songs that I hear where she's got a really kind of sweet, like, spot for, like, a range and a certain style, a certain kind of, you know, things I think she just does really well. I'm like, I want to write around that. You know, that's the best thing you can do, is write for your particular bandmates, because they're human beings and they can only flex so much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's got, you know, there are a lot of musicians that we all hear that we just think are outright geniuses, and they're just like generally really good at like some particular things. But I remember seeing a couple of really well-known singers on like one of the late night talk shows, and it was kind of an almost like improvised thing where they came out and they sang, and like it was so unflattering and it was so different than what they usually do. And it just like that was an example to me. I'm like, they seem like geniuses on their record, and they probably have some level of that, but you know you take a certain style of blues or jazz player and you put them in a slightly different context, and you'd be surprised. They suddenly they fall off the rails, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody sort of has their areas of strength, and so that's how I like to write. Is, you know, I mean, then if you can maximize, this guy plays this kind of beat really well, and this guy, you know, plays these kinds of parts on the, has these kinds of rhythms that are just so funky or whatever it is, and then boom, you're a genius, you know.
Do you write on the road, or do you like to like woodshed?
I love to write on airplanes. I've written a lot of words on airplanes. For some reason, I don't know why it is. When I'm just so far away from a piano or something, I just get an idea. Maybe something will have been stewing in my head, just a single phrase or something, and all of a sudden it'll arrive. I've handed a lot of people like a notebook on a plane and go, look at this. we just wrote this right now. It's really fun and exciting. And I mean, writing a new song and then making a demo of it is my favorite thing out of everything. More than a show, more than a recording. That moment where you've written something and you make a demo of it and you go, listen to this new song. I mean, it's really like having a baby or something.
Do the songs that ultimately make it to the record, since you are so prolific at writing and have such a cachet of songs, are they the ones that work in concert? Do you road test a lot?
You know, I usually kind of leave that up to the singer. In our case, Barrett has, you know, we've done probably all the songs on Dance Scandal live. And after going out and playing for 6 months, she said, okay, here's a couple songs I'd like to put aside. And there can be different reasons. Sometimes some of them are just kind of harder to sing than others, or just some of them like have like long, held out notes, like the root note that's kind of, you know, really kind of tricky to do just right. And it also might be like the lyric and the sort of sentiment of a song isn't really resonating with the singer at that time, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the most important thing. So I would never argue if she or the singer I'm working with is like, hey, I'd like to put this song aside. It's like, I don't think that becomes a democratic situation. I think that just that wins outright.
Okay.
So we've done all the songs on this album. We're still, when we play, we'll generally still do probably at least half of this album combined with new songs and instrumentals and stuff. So
Claudettes.com is where you can find out more information about the band. Follow them online. All their dates are up there, including some. You are going overseas in August, I see.
Yeah, actually, there's an article in there. It's theclaudettes.com. Maybe you said that, and you just slipped that one by me. We've just got a few shows. The album's coming out in Europe too, which is great. So I hope there'll be more shows over there, starting, you know, the fall, etc. But right now we just kind of had been asked to play a couple festivals, and then I knew a guy that was able to get us a show in Finland and Helsinki. So that's what's really hard is to string enough shows together without too many days off, so you can afford to lodge and fly the people around where they need to be. And I was actually just dealing with that headache this evening. I'm attempting to be my own, as if I need another job here. I was going to be my own travel agent, and I think I'm just really, really spectacularly terrible at it. Because it seems to me that, as of right now, I think I'm going to lose $3,000 on this trip. So I got to figure out how do people get this done? Because, well, the one way to get it done is to get paid a lot of money for your shows, and you know that's not exactly where it needs to be yet. But but it's so stressful to me, figuring out. And then one of the people, Barrett, wants to stay longer in Europe, so I've got to extend that ticket. And then her boyfriend's going to go and meet her over there, so I got to figure out how to do I get that ticket? And then I just don't know how to do this. And when I went to a travel agent today, it was much more expensive than I had seen online when you go to Skyscanner and these things like that. So I'm sending out all these emails to people I know saying, how do you do this? How do you do this again? I'm a piano player. I don't know how to. I guess I'm going to have to use a travel agent.
Yeah, routing is the lifeblood of touring. It really is. You got
to
pick up those in-between dates.
Yeah, I've done it driving. I need to drive from Chicago to Montana. That's different than we need to fly to Milan to get to Maggia, you know, the Italian part of Switzerland, and then get to Tallinn, Estonia, so that we can get 90 minutes from there, and then take a ferry to Helsinki, which is what this is. So it's very, I know it sounds like I'm making this up, but that's what I got myself into here.
Sounds like a Chevy Chase movie.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure if it was we're going to play Rome and Barcelona, that's probably pretty easy to book. You know,
right.
It's but I seem to have really, really done it this time. So, but, you know, it's all going to be worth it because the festival I've been in the Italian part of Switzerland and played in Bellinzona there, and it's just unspeakably beautiful, and the food is great, and the guy said, we're so proud and happy to have you here, but they're having us there for an extra day, and they said, you go swimming under the waterfalls, and they can't wait to show us the beautiful valley there. So I'm like, all right, but, you know, hey, if I can break even doing that, you know,
right.
Pretty good score.
We're going to do another song, and we'll be back a final time with Johnny Iguana of the Court of the Claudettes. And this is, let's see what we're going to play. How about Pull Closer to Me? This one's been getting a lot of attention. We'll find out more about the song after this.
Sound the way I have.
listening to Midwest Beats on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide. And that gives a complete different nuance, a different groove, if you will, to the Claudettes, their latest album, Dance Scandal at the Gymnasium. And I've got with me for a final time to do a quick chat here is Johnny Iguana, who's the founder of the group, piano player, songwriter. And Johnny, that song is so beautiful. Stands out from everything else on this album. How did that song come about?
You know, I have a certain reverence for having, you know, some words I jotted into a notebook that I just felt were really good that I wanted to make into a song, but end up sitting there for sometimes multiple years because I just can't find music that can match. And that one took me quite a while because I really liked those words and got in a good zone. I think I might have written those on an airplane, but I just, you know, kept coming back at it. Sometimes you just have to, like, I don't know, like getting out of a batting slump or something. Just try again, you know, and go back to the piano. And then once I started finding the chords, then just kept descending and descending and descending. And I thought it went really well with the sort of drowning motif in the song. And then of course it required what Barrett did, which was, you know, Mark Neal was not into, like, sometimes you do what you call comping vocals, where you go in and you sing something six times and then you listen through and you go, oh, that was a good performance of that line, and you copy and paste and you make a track. That's how almost all of it is done. Mm-hmm. And Mark was not having any of that. He wanted to have, from the band and from the singer, to have one good, really good take, or so it's like a real human moment where, like, that was, you're there with this person at this time. And I remember Barrett did a bunch of takes of that one, and it sounded good, but we knew it wasn't like magic yet. And we were even adjusting the lighting and stuff, you know, the lighting in the room while she was singing, because we're like in the control room and she's in the other room and had some dim lights. And all of a sudden she just did that whole take there. And it was just so good. And she can make me melt, and anyone who hears her, and people, when they see her live, they're amazed because, you know, she's pretty little and she's this kind of got a Midwestern way to my ears of talking, hi, how are you, you know, like that. And you were talking about what a lush instrument she has. It's kind of amazing. Like, some people, I imagine if you're talking to Etta James, she probably kind of sounds like Etta James when she's talking to you, you know.
Right,
but Barrett, you'd be like, whoa, people are like, that's because she can really belt it out when it calls for it. But she can just, you know, lullaby with the best of them. Like, I think everyone just wants to be her baby and be sung to sleep because it's just such a relaxing, warm tone. And there's no honing that. You kind of got what you got there. You know, you can work, flex it a little bit, but between, like, her skills with pitch and just her, like, knack for pitch and then that kind of tone that she can get, it's just really, like, I'm just really happy for whatever time I get to be in a band with her, and just and also get to write for that and hear something that I think is going to sound great with her. It's hard to just hear someone's voice, like, in your head before they've actually sung something, you know. But mm-hmm. I you have to kind of almost look at the piano and go, okay, this, between this E and this B, that's the sweet range right there. Like, that's where a lot of it should be, and get kind of clinical about it. But then that goes away once you just get in the room and start working on it. And
the sparseness of that song. I mean, there is that cascading kind of groove to it, but the words just come out. And as you mentioned, use the word human. There's a lot of humanity, a lot of emotion. And without being, I don't want to say not passionate, it's kind of warm and cold at the same time.
That's a really good description. You know, I mean, I think she's got a little bit of an ice queen quality, you know. Okay. I mean, she's got a certain iciness. But there's that lushness too, and it's understated, which to me can carry a lot more emotion than someone, you know, just like belting, you know. And she's just, you know, she's getting better all the time just with that, with you know. I mean, who cares if someone doesn't convey emotion and you don't think that they care about what they're singing, then it's awfully boring to listen to, you know? And I think she's just really, really good at sort of getting inside the songs now. She's got, you know, just having been together and now playing for a couple of years, I think she's just, like, really taking off that way. And I need to just write as much as I can. Well, you know, everybody, we have a great song that was going to be on the next album called, actually, the song that you played first was an example of a song that I wrote the title before I wrote the song. The full title is really meant to be Pick Yourself Up, Dust Yourself Off, and Give It All Up for Good. That was a song title I had that I thought was almost a good country title. You know, people say, I realized I had to pick myself up, dust myself off, and get back on the horse.
You know? Right, right.
Well, this is more like, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and just like slink on down the road with your head hung low. You know, it's like, you know, like I'm not give it all up for good. So the song that we haven't recorded yet is called "The Show Must Go On," and then parentheses, and then "The Show Must End." And it's really a song about how ephemeral everything is, and really getting to really savoring something while you're in the midst of it, because nothing that we do and no one that we know is going to be here forever. So, you know, it's like, you know, that great Flaming Lips song, "Do You Realize?" You know, it's sort of like in that sort of camp of just like, just really, really treasuring something while, and like to me, being in a band with Barrett and writing for her and, you know, what she can do with a song that I've written like that, it's such, you know, it's a great thing. And I don't know if it'll last 6 more months or 6 more years or whatever, but so that song is a really, that was our last song we did before we took like a 4 month break in the winter. And the band was all found ourselves like hugging each other. It was really like an emotional, because the song is really like slamming, and then it gets really quiet, and then it has these different chapters in it. And it's just, the show must go on and then the show must end. That's true. And everybody should hug each other and treasure anything that's good that's happening. You know, if you're on a vacation and it's just like you're in somewhere you've always wanted to be, and it seems like all the meals are great and you've had great special times, you know how it almost just sinks in and is even better in retrospect?
Right, right.
You know, it's just...
Wow. Well, there is one thing that does last forever, and that is those naked pictures on the internet. So we're going to leave with that song. Claudettes is the name of the group. TheClaudettes.com is where you can keep up with them. My guest has been Johnny Iguana, one of the coolest names in music. And Johnny, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, can I say Anthony Weiner on the radio? Is that a name you can actually say?
Yes, you can.
Bleep that out.
No, you can say Anthony Weiner.
Okay, good.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you, man.
Naked on the internet to take us out. Thank you for listening to Midwest Beats.